This is the Read On Air podcast from RNIB.
When comedian Jo Brand had children, she decided, for reasons we'll discover in a moment, that she should turn her talents to writing. Two of her books are now in the RNIB library, and at a recent book festival, she talked to our interviewer Claire Carson about them both. First of all, Look Back in Hunger.
We never refused the appallingly badly cooked first course at school for fear we would be denied pudding. I loved most puddings. They were possibly about 12,000 calories a throw, but they compensated for the cow's perineum under a blanket of pastry you had just forced down. Unfortunately, these spongy puddings were always served with that standard school accompaniment, lumpy custard, which all but ruined them for me. So I developed a painstaking way of raking the custard over the pudding so that it was thin enough to identify the lumps, which I would then remove and dispose of, sometimes into a handy tissue, if I had one, which I didn't very often, or I would just smear them under the table. Yum. Similar to custard in some ways, and a horror for me, was pink blancmange. I never knew what it was supposed to be, strawberry, raspberry or what. It could have been beetroot for all the flavour it had. The worst thing about it was the thick layer of skin on top. It would have been fine if it could have been lifted up, like a blancmange blanket, and deposited somewhere. But the cooks always seemed to make sure it was broken up and stirred in, so every mouthful had a little or big lump in it. It still makes me feel slightly sick when I think of it.
Well, it's my memoirs, which means it's basically my autobiography with lots of lies in them. Where did the idea come from? Oh, it's so tedious, but I was just asked if I would want to write it. And because it meant I could stay in a bit, I said yes.
And writing came really after you had children.
Yeah, it did. And again, that was related to some extent because when I had kids, A, I was absolutely shattered all the time. B, I didn't want to go out because I had food all down me and baby things. And so in a lot of ways, it was very convenient for me to stay at home and write rather than try and drag my tired, irritable body around the comedy clubs.
So the book that is in Talking Books is called It's Different for Girls. Tell us about that book as well.
Well, Different for Girls in some ways is a sort of evocation of my teenage years, slightly shifted in a parallel sense. So my mother doesn't know quite how awful I was. And it's set in Hastings, which is where I was a teenager. And, I mean, it's just really an attempt to kind of portray the sort of hypersensitivity that's experienced by teenagers about relationships, about their peer group, about getting older, about all those kind of very difficult things that actually are multiplied by 100 when you're a teenager, because you just really don't know who you should be and how you should be that person you want to be, really. And it's funny, hopefully.
Dealing with humour is such a wonderful release. Is that something that you use a lot in your writing? Obviously, it's your métier as a comedian, but to translate that into writing, was that really obvious?
Well, I think there's a big difference between writing in a humorous way and doing stand-up, because in stand-up you have to have roughly 4 jokes a minute or else audiences fall off to sleep or start throwing things at you. Whereas you can be a little bit more relaxed when you're writing a novel, and actually the whole sort of ethos of the book can be humorous without you actually laboriously having to write a joke per paragraph. So in some ways it's less stressful writing because the humour can come out of your characters and out of situations rather than actually having to write one-liners.
When you were younger and looking ahead to your life, did you ever think that you would have done the things that you have done?
I don't think you can ever predict how your life's going to be. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to have 15 children and live on a farm. And I still wouldn't mind doing that, but obviously it's a bit too late for the 15 children because I'm well into my 50s now. So I think it's impossible to predict. It's something I always wanted to do, and I don't really think of myself as a person that sort of achieves everything at all costs. I just sort of forced myself initially to go on stage, and that was really hard to do, but it was certainly lubricated by a lot of alcohol the first time. And then once I'd done it once, I thought, well, I can do it again. So it's just the way it's worked out. I'm more surprised than anyone, really.
You've told us many times in your books, but can you, for our listeners, just articulate how it felt standing in front of an audience that must have just frightened the life out of you?
Well, to some extent, it felt easier than it probably did for most people, because I was a psychiatric nurse for 10 years and I worked in a very kind of highly stressful department which dealt with people who are in crisis. So I had a fair bit of abuse, and may I say it was much more eloquent from psychiatric patients than it's ever been from someone in an audience. So to some extent, it didn't faze me in the way it would most people. But there is that kind of terrifying silence when you face them and you think, I've got to make them laugh, and that those few seconds before you start off is absolutely terrifying, but it's not as terrifying as working down a mine or being in a war, so it's all relative really.
What do you think is the hardest thing that you've ever had to do?
I think probably the hardest things I've ever had to do kind of relate to having been a nurse, really. You know, having to tell people sort of unpalatable news, having to deal with people who are incredibly distressed, and also that applies to certain family things that have happened to me as well. So I would say to me, emotional things are far harder to cope with than physical things.
In the world of the blind and partially sighted, there are people who really aspire to be authors. What words of encouragement would you have for someone in that situation?
Well, I would say do what you really want to do, and if it doesn't succeed, well then at least you've tried. But I would urge anyone to try anything that they're desperate to do. And I think my advice for aspiring writers would be, try and find the voice inside you that's unique. Don't try and copy any other people's styles or be something that you don't really feel comfortable with. And I always think that ends up as a far more successful novel rather than people that admire someone and try and copy their work.
And if you were going to look back over the things that you've done and then try and predict what the next step is. I know that you're working on something for television. Do you have a clear idea of where your path is going, or is it just the next thing?
I have absolutely no idea. I just pick things randomly as they come up. You know, I wish I was organised enough to have a 10-year plan, but I'm not. I'm a very chaotic person. I just feel very thankful for what I've got and very lucky. I mean, having been a nurse for 10 years, I know what it's like to do that sort of job. So anything else is a bonus to me. So no, don't even know what's in my diary for tomorrow at the moment.
Jay, thank you very much for your time.
You're so welcome. Thanks a lot.
Thanks to Claire Carson and Jo Brand. Look Back in Hunger and It's Different for Girls are both available in various formats from the RNIB library, including as talking books. Do you have a favourite funny book, one that really tickles your ribs? Why not tell us about it? The address, as ever, is readonair@rnib.org.uk.
Thanks for downloading the Read On Air podcast from RNIB. Find more podcasts from RNIB on Audioboom, iTunes, and the Apple Podcast app.